Welcome to episode number 38 of Circles Off. I'm Rob Pizzola, joined by Johnny from BetStamp.
What's up, everyone?
What's going on with you?
We're debuting the new sports memorabilia here. For those on audio, you can't see it.
I actually haven't seen it yet.
Edmonton Oilers, NHL franchise, Connor McDavid, the legend, greatest player in the league right now, arguably, signed mini helmet.
As we're recording on the COVID list, as
he is
of
on
today,
the go Leafs go.
Rush to market to bet against Edmonton today.
Yeah, it's this one is one of the few players. I mean, I won't say few players in the NHL, but just less so than NBA. That'll definitely move the line quite a bit. Well, what would you make him percentage overall?
On the team he's playing now, I can't remember what the swing was today, but it was like maybe 5%, something like that.
Was that including the fact that he got COVID yesterday? Was already implied out, or is it today's market move?
I think he was considered doubtful and then confirmed out. Like the NHL rules are ridiculous, but like I'm pretty sure you need two negative tests. So I don't know why the market would have only considered him doubtful today. Like I don't think he had a chance to play, but anyways, that's part of sports betting now, is understanding how the COVID lists work and who can come off what it takes. I mean, it's kind of a disaster.
Okay, give me roughly then, with a neutral ice surface, or sorry, in home game for Toronto, but no fans, with Toronto's lineup right now as is versus with McDavid in, what would the line be? And then we know right as of right now, it's like -280 for Toronto.
Which I have like close to 75% implied for the Leafs at home. So just a little bit higher than market
right now. In this current rate. So what would it be with McDavid in?
Going back, probably we're looking at something like -200.
Okay, fair enough. So it's not moving it a ton.
It's the biggest skill position player in hockey that's going to move a line.
Yeah, makes sense. So yeah, we're debuting the McDavid mini helmet. We're going to try to showcase some different sports memorabilia every single week that we do the podcast. Obviously, you know, football helmets are cool. Hockey helmets, not as popular. The mini helmets are awesome though. You know, you can stack them up, collect all the teams, and then McDavid is just obviously one of the top players in the league. So it's a nice piece to have. Anyways, today's show, well, what else is up this week?
I mean, not a whole lot. I'm kind of just done with the COVID landscape, even though it's not going to be done. It's causing so much more work. And honestly, you should, as a sports bettor, if I wasn't beat down, this is the kind of stuff I would live for. Because like obviously, like whenever you have stuff like this where there's large uncertainty, players coming in and out of lineups, that's probably when you have your biggest edge if you're monitoring stuff, right? Like regular NHL day, not a lot happening. You play your bets in the morning, there's not a lot going on, whatever. But now you have like so many different periods in the day where news can work in your favor or against you. You just got to constantly be available. So I'm pretty beat down. Following NFL and NHL, like two sports that I bet seriously at the same time. It's just like, I enjoyed the Christmas break when the league NHL shut down for a week. A
couple days.
I was really looking forward to potential Olympic break, where it was like, okay, 2 weeks off of this sport, football will be done because it's right after the Super Bowl. Take a couple weeks, relax. But because of the delays now, they'll probably be rescheduling games, NHL not going to the Olympics, so that's really the state that I'm in right now.
it's tough. I think the Olympic break would have been fun, definitely, for sure. It sucks that got canceled. I mean, Olympic hockey with the NHL players is awesome. Without it, it's not as much.
I say this as we talked about this a couple weeks ago when the news was first breaking about the NHL. Well, obviously, me and Johnny are Toronto-based. We're in Canada. I feel like this is the last time, if the Olympics were held this year with NHL players, I feel like it's the last time that Canada would be favored over the U.S. I feel like in 2026, the U.S. Olympic team will be the favorites for gold. And going forwards, that's just going to be the case.
You might be right. But with that being said, like those games are such crapshoots. So like, what would you really make them?
Oh, and they're one and dones. It's not like you're playing a best of seven series or anything like that. For sure. I mean, it's complete crapshoot. But I'm looking at the talent that the U.S. has produced in the draft for like the last 3 or 4 years relative to other countries, especially Canada. and they're just producing way more high-end players.
Yeah, you might be right. Like, it's obviously more popular. Hockey's more popular in the States now. And then when you, you know, I guess compare sheer size of countries, they're going to have more talent. But I will say it's kind of bananas that Canada was so favored for so long in Olympic hockey as well as like World Juniors and stuff like that. Because it's like I said, it's one team and it's a one game elimination tournament. So regular Olympic hockey, it's not like you're playing a team of like NHL players versus like minor leaguers. Like the entire Swedish team is NHL players. The entire, you know, Finnish team, Czech team, Russia is usually not because they have some KHL players that are NHL caliber. Like everyone's NHL caliber in the Olympics on the major countries. So, and then obviously USA superior, like in a few areas for sure, mainly like goaltending now.
Yeah, for sure. Anyways, two topics for today's episode, which we'll get into. And then we're going to debut a new segment at the end, which we teased last week, tweets that trigger us. Will be interesting. I think I selected the majority of the tweets this week because I'm more triggerable than you are, but it'll be interesting at the end to turn that into some sort of educational piece. But first topic this week, we're going to talk about NFL live betting strategies. And the reason why is I hosted a Twitter Spaces on our BetStamp account on Sunday night. I actually don't do a whole ton of NFL live betting. Part of the reason why is because I'm usually watching on a delayed stream. Because I don't actually have cable. I pay for streaming service, so I'm behind real time. It makes it very difficult to live bet. With that said...
Guys, hold up. You know how we did a segment identifying fraud bettors? Not paying for the fastest possible stream of cable, that's actually on the list. Now, I'm not saying Rob's a fraud bettor in any capacity, but you got to pay for the fastest stream. For like, you know what I mean? You can't be watching on a delayed feed, sweating games on DAZN. No offense, like shout out DAZN, you know, a great service.
DAZN is the only rights holder in Canada for NFL Red Zone. So that's the challenge. I can't watch. You're different than me. Your Sunday experience is you put up all the games that you're interested in and you watch those. I don't. I watch Red Zone on Sundays.
Yeah, that's also delayed.
Yeah, I know. I'm aware. There's lots of times where I tweet about stuff and I'll get some sort of comment of like, oh, great. Like, thanks for telling me after the fact type of thing. Oh, you're genius. I'm not. I mean, I'm seeing what I conceive to be real time. It doesn't bother me though. It bothers me for live betting, obviously. That's a struggle. But, and it hasn't always been like this. I have no reason to get cable anymore other than sports.
Yeah.
It's a disaster. Like no one does.
I guess. I mean, like I'm obviously like a couple of years younger than you and I've never actually cared about cable. Like obviously when I was a kid, had cable watching like cartoons and stuff like that and like watching, you know, TV shows, but I don't watch anything on TV except for sports, but I'll still pay for cable because I like, you know what I mean? Turn on the Leaf game. Like I don't want to have to go through the hassle of even like these people are not even going to like you. If you're from the US, Sportsnet Now, Sportsnet Go, TSN Go, you know, you obviously don't know what those are, but they're just like the streaming services for the ESPN equivalents. I don't want to have to connect my computer. I don't have to log into a portal on TV and then the game's like 2 minutes delayed. It's like
it's about 20 to 30 seconds.
Okay. But once you bet on sports and you're following multiple games for NFL, if you're watching on a delayed stream of any capacity, even if it's 30 seconds to a minute delayed, now it prohibits me from checking the second screen experience of Twitter or checking the other scores because I'm going to ruin something. So,
yes,
obviously I have to have other box scores open for checking everything, not just that. And what I do is we've got, three screens here right now at this time, but normally sometimes it'll be like up to five. But when we've got 3 to 5 screens, we'll be basically managing the remotes and getting the game has the most action on the TV. So, I'm checking the scores of the games to say, okay, Cincinnati's in the red zone, put that on volume, put that on right screen, then we get that on left screen. You just have people manning the remotes here. That's the play. If you're going to actually like just watch on a delayed stream, then as soon as you check the scores, you're going to be like, oh, Derrick Henry got a touchdown. Colts are in the red zone, and then you're going to change it to red zone. You're going to see on your phone that Pittman just punched in a touchdown, and then you're going to like see another play, and you're like, this is the Pittman touchdown. You don't get to watch anything live. It's like,
yes, but you play fantasy sports. I don't. And even when I play daily fantasy, I don't check score. I don't check scores or fantasy in real time. Like my phone is not with me other than Twitter being open. And I actually don't, I don't want to say that I like it when the game's ruined for me, but I don't mind it. Like when I see everybody going crazy on Twitter and I know something crazy is about to happen, it's like a level of adrenaline that I get that's hard to describe. I don't know. It's really weird, but none of that stuff bothers me. Definitely, there's a lot of people that that's going to be completely bothersome. Like, I don't want to ruin the game or whatever. But I just did Twitter spaces with Frank Brank and Austin Mock, and their US regular cable feeds were like on the same level as the one that I was watching on delay anyway. So who knows? I don't even, like, who's really watching in real time anymore?
All I'm saying is I will, like, for the amount of money that it costs, which is, again, it's a decent amount, but it's not like crazy that we can't afford cable. Like, I'm going to pay for the fastest service that I can that enables me to watch the most games because I like sports so much. Not that I waste money on everything that's convenient, but for me, this is like a non-negotiable thing. Like, I will,
fair enough.
If cable went away and there was a faster thing that I could just buy sports, then I would 100% purchase that. And not, I don't watch the news. I don't watch TV show. Like,
see, you value the speed. I value the functionality. And the reason I moved off of cable was because as I was going to swear here. I don't care. It doesn't matter if we swear, but it was a disaster basically for me. Like if I turn on a game and I can't get the channel that I had a week ago and then call customer service for a company and they tell me, you know, you're on the wrong channel. I'm like, no. I'm on the right channel. They're like, no, change to this channel. I'm like, this is NFL Network. Like, I'm looking for NFL Red Zone. I watched it last week on this channel. Now it says it's not available. It's on my package because I checked. They're like, sir, you're on the wrong channel. I'm like, listen, man. I'm a huge NFL fan. I know the difference between Red Zone and NFL Network. This is not the live games. That was the breaking point for me. So that's why I'm done with cable. Now I just can. I was very mad. But yes, okay. NFL live betting strategy. Even though I don't do a ton of live betting.
Step one, purchase a cable package.
Speed is important. That is going to be one of the things that we talk about for sure. Speed is important.
Rob could essentially only bet on the commercial breaks now.
Yes and no.
And not that I can't, like, okay, let's get into it. Let's start it. This is a great combo, and I love the whole, like, free rolling aspect and betting in game. And because, like, at the end of the day, like, the TV stream you watch, no matter when you watch it, even if it's on cable, it's still like 5 seconds delayed, right? So you still actually do get free rolled by the book in some cases if they're spinning wheeling you. But we'll go, let's get into exactly what you want to talk about here.
Okay, so general NFL live betting strategy is not the exact same of if you were betting NFL pregame, because the dynamics of live betting are very different. You typically don't have a long period of time in order to be able to get in your bet. Whereas if you're betting pregame, a lot of times you have, sometimes you're acting instantaneously, but oftentimes you can take your time, find the best line. You still have to find the best line. That's where I wanted to start with this. Line shopping is important. You're doing yourself a massive disservice if you are still live betting on one book and getting one number. 3, 4, 5, the more books you have, the easier it is going to be in the long run to profit, regardless, when you have different lines available to you. Now, I will say, you probably want to stick to something like 3 or 4 books for live betting, because it can be overwhelming as well. You do not have the ability to go and type in all these lines on some sort of tool that spits out the best available line to you, because by the time you do that, the number is gone.
Yeah, time is of the essence.
So there are some things that apply from the pregame NFL betting that you have to transfer over, but you have to do it within reason. So similar concepts, but definitely price sensitivity, regardless of when you're betting or what you're betting on, is just a integral factor in betting regardless.
Yeah. And in live betting markets, the prices are even more, quote unquote, all over the place than in the traditional pregame markets. So like they're just moving way faster. And because of that, significantly more differences, right? So you might find like one team at like plus 350, you just check another site. It's like plus 590. Like, it's not uncommon to see that in a live betting scenario. Whereas in the pregame betting market, those things will typically get picked off right away and it won't be available. So live betting, definitely line shopping, number one thing. But as Rob mentioned, like, you don't have time to open up like 12 tabs. There is, and I will say this right now, like, there is no, we're working on potentially trying to build something, but there is no good live odds comparison tool. Like, anyone that's claiming to sell an odds comparison tool for live betting is just complete bull, because the speed at which you need to bet, like, they're not pulling those lines in as much. Half of the time when you're talking about live betting, the sportsbook will be like, have a grayed out number, which what that means, and at least that's what I call it and refer to it in our circle as, is when something's grayed out, that means it's not actually bettable. So
off
it'll
the
show
off the board.
It's off the board. It's on the board. That's what I'm saying. That's why I call it grayed out, because that's what a couple of the books do. They gray out the number, meaning they'll show you that the line is Kansas City -6.5, -115, but it's not available to bet. So when you have odds comparison tools pull things in like that, it just like the book is not confident in that number. They haven't actually opened it up. They're not willing to write any action on that, meaning it's not a real number. Technically, it's just there. It's not actually meaningful. So when you have scenarios like this, odds comparison tools don't really work. And when Rob mentioned, like, you know, stick to 2 or 3 or 4, that's probably the sweet spot. There is maybe 3 books. Pick your best 3 live betting outs and just go for those ones, because you need to be able to see when stuff's actually on the board, when stuff's off the board. You need to be able to check, obviously, the betting limits of each site, how much each will be taking at certain times, whether it's actually truly in game or at a commercial break and different things like that. So sticking to 2 or 3, obviously shopping around between those 2 or 3 is good. But this is not the spot where you can have any like slow outs, because otherwise you're going to, you know, just waste time trying to get bets in, and it's going to be frustrating and a terrible like betting experience.
Well said. The biggest difference between pregame betting and live betting. And honestly, the reason I really wanted to do this topic is because we get lots of questions about live betting. But also if you Google NFL live betting, which I did today and went through some of the content out there, pretty poor. It's a lot of repetitive stuff. You'll see the same thing. The biggest thing that's not touched on is the difference between the markets. When you are pre-game betting on the NFL, you're putting your number or your bet into a sports book. We've talked about this before. You're betting into a sports book, but the reality is you are competing against other people in the market who are shifting the line with money. Bookmakers just reacting to where the money goes. During live betting, that does happen as well. Somebody bets into a line, it's going to move. But you're more so betting against an algorithm, essentially. That's what most sports books are doing. They're paying some sort of data provider to provide them with live probabilities in real time. They're taking those probabilities. They're adding a VIG on both sides, which is typically more than a pregame market. And you're betting against that algorithm. So your biggest edge in live betting is trying to understand what that algorithm is accounting for, what's being accounted for here. And where can I possibly deviate from that? The perfect example, or one of the perfect examples, was a game that we've talked about on this podcast before, which happened in the NFL this season, a Monday night football game between the Buffalo Bills and New England Patriots, where the wind was blowing very strongly in one direction, but live odds were not accounting for that. And you could have easily been able to back a team with the wind or bet against the team going into the wind, which was clearly not factored into the probability. So these are the kinds of edges you are looking for. Now, oftentimes you're going to have to act fast because, again, it's a competitive market. You're competing with other people as well who are going to bet into that same line. But the algorithms, you eventually, over time, will become more and more sophisticated, but they can only account for so much.
Yeah, and as Rob mentioned, when you're betting against an algorithm versus a market, there's an ability to be first to market on certain reactionary news. So Rob mentioned like win and stuff like that. Obviously the biggest one is injuries. Like as soon as a player gets injured, oftentimes in an NFL game, you don't know if he's actually out for the game or if he just hobbled off and he's going to be right back in the next play. So for things like a quarterback, you'll have like, I recall a couple weeks ago, Derek Carr, quarterback for the Raiders, go down, and the commentators were making a big deal. They're like, oh, Carr went down, like he's holding his knee or something like that. Like this could be a bad one. They're like, there's no Marcus Mariota on the sideline today. Like, this could be a bad situation for the Raiders. Like, obviously implying that there's a chance that not their second string quarterback, but actually their third string quarterback on the roster would be coming in to man the game. And what happened was just like, it went to commercial break. There was a tweet fired off that said, Carr is actually fine. He's just put his helmet back on. He's entering the game. And at the time, the betting market had shifted. So people had moved it towards one way. Obviously, the line, you're betting against an algorithm, right? So the algorithm doesn't actually factor in that info. It's humans moving it and bets moving it and people trading it on the other side of things. So you have a situation like that. Then news comes back that actually Carr is fine. You know, go ahead, back. You can bet the Raiders after the adjustment, things like that. So that's one way that you can actually bet against people and other market makers and movers in this situation is being reactionary to news, being first to market on either news that someone's out or news that it was implied someone was out and they're actually back in. But then when we're talking about betting against just the straight algorithm, you have other things like Rob mentioned, like the wind, or like, is a kicker injured? Like, is the kicker injured? Now they're no longer going to kick field goals. And now you can go hammer a bunch of different stuff, like total field goals under, next score, touchdown, next score, next three scores, touchdowns. Like, you can hammer all those on certain live betting books where you can just like pick off across the board.
Yeah. I would say like team tendencies and strengths change over the course of a season as well, but they're not encapsulated. One example would be a team that fires their coach midseason and a new coach comes in and their style of play when leading or trailing is very different than the previous coach. Well, if you're building an algorithm to account for what a team's going to do when they're leading, you're going to take the long sample of the entire season, say this team plays really fast, they throw the ball, they still throw the ball or whatever, and then you might get a completely different dynamic. So again, it's just trying to pick up on things that I don't want to say an unsophisticated algorithm, because they're actually very sophisticated, but they're also very easy to kind of predict and know what's being factored into those, right? Like, if you were building some sort of model to account for the NFL, is this going to be something that would be easily incorporated? And in a lot of cases, you know, two injuries on the same play on an offensive line or something like that, it's very likely that that's going to be factored in immediately. Also, it's going to be the opposing team is going to factor into that equation as well. Did that injury actually matter in the grand scheme of things? Is the market going to overreact to that type of thing with the matchup? So there's all sorts of stuff, but I'd certainly say injuries, weather, and any sort of dynamic shift over the course of a season that you think is something completely different from what we would have expected earlier on in the season is probably not being captured correctly.
Yeah, I agree. When we talk about, again, betting against that algorithm and not necessarily like just factoring in how it's made, what I would say is, we've heard people talk about this, you know, people like Ed Miller, Matt Davidow, who run Deck Prism Sports. They do the live betting software for a number of sports books that has been publicly announced, including some of the largest ones in the US and offshore. And what they've mentioned is, like, you know, they're building this based on an algorithm that they have, and then they're adjusting in game and they're constantly making improvements, right? So at the end of the day, when you're building it based on an algorithm, what they're essentially saying is this team was a 16-point favorite coming in. Now they're down 14. This is the new spread based on our mathematical model. But oftentimes it doesn't factor in that certain teams have different tendencies, like Rob said, and they might be playing different in the game. So when you look at a team like last week, the New York Jets were playing the Bucks, and it seemed like they were really trying to go for the win there. There was two scenarios late in game where the Jets actually went for it on fourth down instead of potentially punting it, which in some scenarios is like the safer play and probably the statistically correct play on at least the first one there. If you pick up on those tendencies, there's oftentimes you can say, like, okay, the Jets are trying to win this game really, really badly. Like, they're likely going to go for it. Maybe the spread is not going to come into play as much as the money line in this game. So maybe, you know, the spread of +3.5 isn't going to matter, or +2.5 isn't going to matter, because the Jets are either going to win this game or they're going to lose it by 6 here, or they're going to lose it by whatever, 3 here. They're not going to kick this field goal. They're going to try to score a touchdown and not send it to OT. You might have other scenarios where, not saying that a team is tanking, but there's scenarios where you can tell that a team has just given up on the game And this might even come into play in like the third quarter, right? If a team has the ball, they're down 21 points. You have it fourth and one at midfield at the end of the third, and they punt that ball away. They've essentially given up on that game. And then you get into the fourth quarter, and it's in, they might have, you know, another fourth and two on their own 45, and you'll see them punt it away again. At that point, you can pretty much safely assume that for the rest of the game, any borderline scenario, they're going to punt the ball away. It's going to really impact what your value on the actual point spread is going to be in that game, knowing that this team is not actually going to start firing away. Typically, that's a key sign to bet the under in the game versus the over. And also, you know, potentially, depending on what the spread is at the time, you can find an advantage there. And then there's other scenarios where you can see a team is down and they're like, doesn't matter if I lose by two or if I lose by 28.
Right.
So I'm going to be going for this like crazy. And if I lose, I lose. So in those scenarios, there's way more variance. And then again, you have an additional edge there. And then that's typically a scenario in which you'd bet the over in the game, because if it's a fourth and one at their own 30, they go for it. You know, in the scenario that they miss it, it's probably points on the board for the other team. And in the scenario where they're more aggressive, it's a higher expected value points for your team. So looking at tendencies like that, when teams have given up and when they're actually still trying to win the game and they don't care how much they lose by, you know, you mentioned this on Twitter, like a lot of teams now, it seems like they're, the coaches are kind of trying to more save face and lose by a little less. They don't want to get absolutely thrashed by the Cowboys. So they'll try to, you know, punt the ball a little more, kick field goals, even when the game's already over, just to make it so that they only lost by 11. When at the end of the day, losing by 11 is getting you the same amount of credit as a loss by 28.
For sure. Okay, so we've gone over dynamic changes. One thing,
well, do you agree there, by the way?
I do. That happens all the time. I mean, you kind of know sometimes by the aggressiveness of the coach over the course of the year as well, and who it is, whether they're going to be going for a fourth down situation. So you can almost get that bet in advance sometimes of the actual fourth down coming. Like if it's a third and long and you know the coach is going to go for it. I mean,
I'm not even talking about like the Chargers going for it more this year and like stuff like that. What I'm the Packers have been going for it more when they're in short yard situations. I'm talking like just seeing in the game, like a team being down and being like, oh, the Jags are, they gave up. They're not even trying to go. Like if it's fourth and 15, with 6 minutes left and you're down two scores, like you have to go for that. Yep. You're not going to lose. You're not going to win the game if you punt it. And if they punt that, then what that just tells you is that they don't, this game is over and they're probably just going to punt again on the next down as well. So it's a scenario where you can just look at that. I'm saying after having the info come in that they've quote unquote given up, and then find an edge there on whether it be the total or the spread, depending on, again, if the key numbers are going to come into place, which I'm sure is something we'll talk about in a second.
Well, I think it's a valid point, and I mean, it can be brought back to real life, but you mentioned the Chargers, you look at Brandon Staley, their head coach, known for being highly aggressive. They were playing the Denver Broncos last week, a situation where Denver had a lot of COVID going on with the team. The Chargers went off as 8.5 point favorites. Brandon Staley actually was kicking long field goals on fourth and short, which is very unlike what he would typically do in the past. That's something that if you're modeling the course of a season with the Chargers going to go for it or not, you would give them a very high probability to go for it. You see them kick that first field goal. You say, okay, maybe something's different here with the mentality of the game. They realize they just don't want to, they'll make the Broncos work for things or something like that. I don't really know what the logic was, but that just changes the way that they're going to play the game, right?
Probably got backlash for losing to Houston.
Of course. I mean, who knows? The media was all over him. Key numbers and line shopping. We talked about a little bit about the line shopping, but I think a very challenging thing for most recreational bettors when they are live betting the NFL is the amount of time that they have to get in a bet and trying to distinguish which of the numbers that they're getting at different sportsbooks is actually better, because you'll get lots of funky numbers, which you don't see pregame, and you'll get like 18.5s. 23.5. So you don't see these spreads pregame in the NFL. At least it's very rare. And on top of that, because sportsbooks charge more vig for live, you often get some funky vig on the games, minus 127 on a side or something like that. So it's very difficult for you in real time to have three sportsbooks open and, like I said, type in all these lines in some sort of tool. You know, lots of people use Unabated. You can go there and type in three lines. That's great pregame. In-game, very difficult and challenging to do so. I think a good exercise for anyone who is more recreational and wants the live bet is to actually go through the practice of doing this in real time, where maybe it's a commercial break and you get three different lines at a sports book. You kind of write them all down or put them in a spreadsheet. And in that moment, pick out what you think is the best line and do that for an entire game. Do that for multiple games. And at the end of the day, go back after the game's over the following day, figure out how many times you were correct or not and which ones you were incorrect on. And you will just learn by basically going through that type of process. You learn through error. So I think that's something that's very important because, again, we preach it all the time, but it really does make a big difference. Like even if you're saving 5 cents, 10 cents on a game, this stuff all adds up over time. And even if you're a casual bettor, it's still worthwhile to do it. Anyone does this in their daily life in terms of cost savings, right? If you're getting the exact same thing for a different price, you're always going to take the cheaper price. So go through that process. Try to understand what the better numbers are in terms of incorporating the VIG and everything like that. But it does make the world a difference. And in real time, you just don't have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I'd say to add to that, obviously practice makes perfect. But there's a lot of times where people have, you know, in their head, they have ideas of what some key numbers are from pregame, which they're absolutely correct about, you know. So obviously in NFL, highest key number would be the three, right? The one field goal score. So you have like a +3.5 and a -2.5. That's an automatic earn at a low enough juice rate in pregame, right? But in game, when the scores are all jumbled up, oftentimes the books, and I won't say like they won't get you, they're not out to get you or anything like that, but a lot of times people will get caught by buying points that are completely useless or dead numbers, completely dead. So an example of this would be, I'll go for the exact correct answer. I'll say like, let's say we're talking about an NFL playoff game, okay? And you have Chargers Chiefs and the Chargers are up 3, okay? So now, if the Chargers are up 3, and you now take a spread that is Chiefs -3, okay? That means that you have the Chiefs to win by 3 points, right? So the 3 is the exact same in that scenario as the 3.5, because the reality is you cannot tie that game in the NFL playoffs.
Right.
So the Chiefs winning the game and went like covering -3, and I'm talking more about like an in-play live that's like a second half or a quarter line or something like that. So not even like a full game line in this scenario, which we'll get into in a second. But let's say you're at the half, okay? And you're betting a live bet, like a second half bet, and you're taking the Chiefs -3. The Chiefs -3, if they're already down 3, is the exact same as Chiefs -3.5 and 2.5, because you cannot tie. So if you see -2.5, -125, you're much better off to take -3, -110, and even better, you're much better off to take -3.5 at +100. It's essentially the same bet, but you're getting different numbers for each. So this is going to be a significant advantage if you're looking at in-game betting. But when I say in-game betting, I don't mean the straight money line or straight game spread. I mean anything to do with quarters, halves, or alternate scoring that has to do with like a specific thing. So those are big deals in these scenarios where you're not able to, or even just, you know, game goes to overtime, you know, like factor in what the chances are of like the game going to OT. Sometimes that's like almost dead on arrival, right? And they don't adjust the odds significantly for that. You know, for example, if the game is currently at a 5-point differential, then it's possible to go to OT, you know, you have the field goal and go by 2, but it's a little more difficult, for example, than if the game's at 4-point differential and you have a team scoring a touchdown, extra point, and the other team tying it back up with a field goal. So looking at these dead numbers, also scenarios like that, and I've been talking for a while now, but if the spread, for example, is, you know, +2.5, and that team is currently down by 3, then it's very tough for the 2.5 to come into play in the actual game, because what's likely going to happen is they'll either, I mean, I'm talking late game scenario, but if they tie it up and send it to overtime, it's very hard for the 2.5. It would have to be a safety in OT, obviously, or something to do with a missed extra point in regulation as well, or it might be like a touchdown and then a field goal. Like there's a lot of differences that might happen, because if you're down 3 and you go for it and you get a touchdown, you're going to be up 3, you can kick the extra point to go up 4. Now the other team is also not going to just try to kick a field goal. You know what I mean? They're going to try to go for a touchdown. Right. And then when they get that touchdown, they're going to want to be up three as well. So they're going to kick the extra point and not go for two. So the scenario there where the 2.5 comes into play is very unlikely. So again, in that scenario, why take the 2.5 when you can take the money line at a better odds, or the plus one or plus half, whatever it might be in that scenario?
All right. Two more things I want to get to, but they are more about dispelling myths, I would say, about live betting. These came up in every content piece that I read about today. All right. And I disagree with them. That doesn't mean that I'm right, but I'll tell you specifically why I disagree with both of them. You can tell me if you agree or not. The first one, don't chase. So when people say don't chase, this is the idea that you've already made a live bet. I'll pick a random team. You've bet the Bears plus 7 against the Packers, and the Packers have now went and scored another touchdown, and the live odds have updated, and you can get now plus 14.5 or something. I'm just throwing random numbers out there. Most of these sites will say, don't chase. You have the possibility of, you know, losing way too much. And the reality is, if you think that that second bet is still a good bet, then you should place it. Now, obviously, you have the risk of losing more on a game when you start making more bets on a game. This is just like common sense, right? But if you feel like you're getting a valuable line, you should not avoid it just because you've already bet it at a worse line.
Yeah, it's not an automatic do and don't. Right. I agree 100%. Like, what I think, you know, most of the time, like, yeah, if you're just like trying to have fun on the game and you're dunking some negative EV bets and you're just like tossing some money on something that's just for fun, and then you get a better line, like, yeah, probably the best call is not to dunk your entire sportsbook balance on one bet. But in general, like, there's no way that could be a rule of thumb. Like, avoid chasing. Like, what, chasing what? You know what I mean? Like, you got to be, if you have a bet and then the line moves, now it's a new situation in game. You may have a new edge that's uncovered based on the new line at the new, you know, point spread or money line odds based on the new score in the game. So obviously you're going to have a correlated bet if you like the same side. So potentially staking like a little bit less on that as per correct bankroll management might be a little bit better, but all in, like, there's no way that you that should be a rule of thumb. Like, don't chase your bets. Never bet once you have, you know, gone down the rabbit hole and already had a bet in.
Like, obviously everything within reason. You don't want to keep doubling down over and over and over and like increasing your, like, again, everything within reason.
Dollar cost average.
Right. The reality is, though, is that if you think that you've made a bad bet earlier in the game, whatever, that's fine. That's going to happen because of the nature of the NFL. Any score or field position change, turnover is going to change the live odds. If you feel that something has worked against you and you're getting a better price and you still have value at that price, bet it.
Yeah, there's also been times where I've done the reverse on that. And, you know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But what I mean when I say the reverse is, well, let's say like you have a team in hockey down 3-0, and I think they're completely outplaying the other team, and it's going to be a significant chance that they come back to tie this game. And I bet them at plus 1,000, and then they score a goal. And now they're down 3-1, and I still think it's mispriced at plus 600, which obviously the line got
moved
in my favor. Yeah. I might hit them again at plus 600. And then what might happen is now they're down 3-2 and they still might be priced in a range of plus 300, which I still see as value. So I'm going to add more to my position, even though the line that I'm getting now is actually, quote unquote, less favorable, even though it's moved in my favor, but I'm getting less return now. I'm getting less odds. I'll still bet it because I still feel it's an edge, even though it's going the other way around. So definitely, I think what you're saying is 100% true. There's no rule of thumb. Like, you can repop something 3, 4, 5 times in either direction. Obviously, just be cognizant that you're not, you know, entering a spot where you're betting more than you could afford to lose, because they are, you know, in all scenarios correlated on the same team.
The second one I wanted to get into, which this is common sense. We've talked about this on this podcast before. I hope that people who have listened to previous episodes can pick up right when I say this, what the problem is. Always try to middle the game. Now, this is a thing people do, and that's fine. You know, the whole idea of getting, you know, plus money on both sides of a game, you're guaranteed to win money regardless of who wins. I get it. I understand why people would want to do that, guarantee themselves money. The reality is, You should never make a bet that you don't think is positive expected value just to guarantee yourself money. You're actually costing yourself EV in the long run by making that bet. So a lot of people will do that. They're like, okay, I can get a middle on this game. I can walk away with some money. Sometimes it doesn't make sense. And that doesn't just apply to live betting. That applies to every opportunity you ever have to middle. I see this all the time, especially in this day and age in the NFL, because the COVID news, you see the line swing so much that people will bet it, and then they'll bet the other side at close to give themselves an opportunity to middle. That's fine, provided that you actually feel that you have value on that other side when you bet it.
Yeah, we've said it before. If you're just doing this for fun and it's more fun for you to lock in the profit, live another day, that's fine. You know, you could do it. But you're not going to make money long-term by doing that. You're going to cost yourself money in the long run, as Rob said. Simply put, quite obvious, you can never arb out of your bets that didn't move in your favor. You know what I mean? So if that's the case and you can't arb out of bets that didn't move in your favor, what's going to happen is you're going to arb out of the ones that are high expected value, and you're going to just straight lose the ones that are low expected value. All in, you're costing yourself money. And with the total VIG on live betting market, we didn't really mention this, but it is a higher... It's
significant.
Yeah, it's a significant juice. Like typically, you're not going to be betting into like minus 110, minus 110. Usually be minus 15, minus 15. In some cases, you know, you might have minus 10, minus 10, but that will be for more reduced juice books. That might be a minus 05, minus 05 pregame. So in any scenario, the book will never offer you the same odds pregame and in play. So just even, you know, factoring that in is like you're paying additional VIG to arb out. It's probably not smart unless you feel you have an edge on that for whatever reason, reacting to news, something else came in, new info, or if you like that side better.
All right. I think we did a good job with this topic. We're about 40 minutes in here. I got to say,
you want to skip this next topic?
No, let's do it.
Let's start it. Let's skip it to next week.
Okay, let's do that.
And then we'll get into the segment now. And sure, then we can do a better job on this next week. Otherwise,
sounds good. It is a really big topic. I'm proud of you, by the way. You lasted 40 minutes. You didn't pick up your mic. You didn't turn your chair. You've been in like the same spot. So it took like a week for you to develop some professionalism.
I got this new chair. This is the thing. This one swivels. And I went off mic here. This one swivels. The other chair I had was not, it was just like a regular like folding chair. We're still coming up with the full setup. And we got a new table coming in that should be a lot better in terms of like angling for us to be facing each other and facing the camera as well. So we're making do where we are, but I thank you for that. Yeah, I'm trying to. Last week was a mess when I watched that back. I was fidgeting with everything.
It wasn't your finest performance. But listen, everyone grows. Everyone gets better. You learn from experience, right? Sometimes, you know, I wasn't a winning bettor when I first started betting. I was running away from bookies all over the place, owing like $800 when I was in high school. You learn from these experiences and you move on.
What happened to you, Pizzola?
No. Okay, here's what we're going to do. The second topic that we were going to do was bankroll management. It's very convoluted and bloated, I would say. We could probably spend an hour on it, so we will move it. It won't be next week. Next week, we're going to have Adam Chernoff on.
Okay, so we'll save it for the next
episode. So we'll save it for the next episode. That's an educational topic, which will be bankroll management, because there's a lot to talk about there. But we will get into a new segment, which I'm looking forward to. Let's see how this goes. Zach, you can hit it.
I don't know what we're yelling about!
I've never seen you mad.
I get paid.
Why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
Okay, tweets that trigger us. We're going to get started here. We have selected... We'll go through the process first of what happens. I spend so much of my week on Twitter, probably more so than you, Johnny. I get mad when I see some stuff. Part of it is just like dumb commentary. It's directed at me, like, Pizzola, you're an idiot for feeling this way. That's not kind of the stuff I want to focus on. But when I do get triggered, I'm making notes of this is what really bothered me. And the idea is not to rip these people per se, although I might get there because, you know, sometimes I'm a negative, pessimistic person. But it's too...
You're mad, bro.
Sometimes, yes. And I'd like to turn it into a learning experience in some cases. Sometimes it'll be very obvious. Sometimes it won't be. But this will be heavily dominated by my tweets. But we'll start with one of yours because you wanted to contribute to this session.
All right. So for anyone listening on audio right now, we do have the YouTube available with the video content. If you want to check it out, please subscribe on YouTube. It will help us out a lot in terms of growing and exploring a new audience. So we'll read out the tweets first, I guess who they're from, like to give some context. So if you're on video, you can follow along here. So first one I'm going to read out, this is from Rob's good friend, Spread Investor, who he's known for quite some time. And I know he's been over his house for dinner and stuff like that. He's like a good buddy of his. So he is posting, I'll give the context. Somebody DM'd him off Twitter. He blurred out the name. And he said, the person who DM'd him said, "Do you have any tips on bankroll management? Have you written an article about it anywhere? Love your stuff, man. And I'm excited for when college basketball picks up." So he's asking for tips on bankroll management and exactly, you know, how that works. And here was the response from Spread Investor. So he said, "It all stems from emotion. Control your emotions. You control the bankroll. Everyone talks about bankroll management, but when you're not tilting, there is no logic. You have to find something to do to replace the tilt. Go for a walk, turn off the phone. But it's all about how you premeditate that stuff well before the bet. Have to visualize seeing yourself under control even after the worst beats. It's like a diet and avoiding the fatty foods at parties." So, obviously,
by the way, I didn't see this tweet in real time. I don't follow this guy. I can't. Johnny's joking. He's being like very what's the word I'm looking for?
Sarcastic.
Sarcastic, yeah. When he says that we're friends. I don't like this guy at all. Had I seen this, this could have been a candidate for me as well. So I'm glad you picked this one out.
So here's why this tweet triggered me, okay? And very simply put, I'll start this off by saying this. The advice he's giving in this tweet is fine advice for a lot of stuff. You know, oh, he's saying you got to control your emotions. You have to be calm, not get tilted. It's like a diet. You have to avoid the fatty food at parties. You know what? Honestly, that might be fine advice for other stuff. But let me tell you what it is not fine advice for. And that is bankroll management. Because I'll tell you what bankroll management is. This is, quite honestly, so mathematical that it has nothing to do with emotion and control and meditation and things like that that he's talking about. Okay. Bankroll management is optimizing how much money you have per your bet size, so that you can A, stay in the game longer and not go bust, and B, maximize your return with the most amount of money. There is quite simply mathematical strategies and formulas that you can apply to your betting based on your betting style, your risk tolerance, and the amount of money you have that are going to help you, okay? What he is giving advice for here, like I said, is absolutely not bankroll management. He's giving advice on how to not be a problem gambler. He's giving you advice on how to not, yes, you know what else you got to do when you lose $500? Don't stay up late, play on the online casino and lose another $1,000. You definitely can't do that. You have to be disciplined. But I will say meditating, thinking about it, getting in the zone and avoiding fatty food at parties is not going to help you with your bankroll management. That was a topic we had for this podcast, and we're going to break it down in detail. We'll put some stuff on the screen, show you exactly how to calculate stuff in a future episode that's going to actually help you. In the meantime, feel free to take this advice, though, if you are trying to lose some weight for the new year.
Well said. Yeah, I mean, I have nothing more to add. This is just advice on how not to be problem gambler. That's exactly what it is, which is fine. Definitely not tips for bankroll management. All right, Zach.
His tip is go for a walk.
Go for a walk. Well, you know what? Listen, sometimes you got to blow off some steam. I listen to music or whatever, but it's never affecting my
bankroll. I have $1,000. How much should I be betting per game? Go for a walk.
Go for a walk. Avoid those fatty foods at parties, and maybe it'll come to you.
Go for a walk and visualize how much you're going to bet for this game. That's how you bankroll manage.
All right. Tweet number two. We move on. All right. I'll give some context for this one. This is from an account called Hockey Statistics, at Hockey Statisti 1. Now, I have nothing against this account. I don't follow it. Got kind of, I actually think somebody sent this to me or tagged it with trigger tweets or something like that. But there's a chart here of the log loss of closing lines for NHL over time. Log loss is just an error metric. For anyone who doesn't know, it's just a measure of how well the closing line has performed over time, which has fallen off a cliff the last 2 years here. I'll get to that in a second. The tweet. I'm working on a new prediction model, so I'm building a baseline from the log loss of the closing lines. The market log loss this season and last is significantly lower than the previous seasons. Either the parity has decreased and slash or the bookies are getting better. This stuff, again, I'm sure this is a nice guy who's just evergreen, or sorry, like green in the space, doesn't understand. If the log loss or the closing line of a sport is getting worse. Well,
explain what the chart means. Explain what it means, because it is, I'm not going to say it's valuable, but it does show a trend. So explain what trend it does, and then we can get into that.
Over time, we see very consistently for the last decade or so that the log loss is in a similar range. And then last year and this year for hockey, it's going way down. The closing line is less efficient in the NHL. This does not mean the bookies are getting better. In fact, it would mean the exact opposite. If the closing line is worse, it technically means the bookies are worse. But even furthering this argument, it has nothing to do with the bookies. It has literally nothing to do with the bookies. It is a measure of what the market is betting. Again, being a bookmaker, no disrespect to bookmakers out there. I have friends that are. Jeff Davis is one that comes to mind, who would probably entirely agree with me here. It's very simple. You're just moving based off of the money that's coming in. It's not that complicated. So to say that bookies are getting better because the closing line is getting worse is completely irrelevant. And on top of that, what bothers me the most about this is, like, let's think about what's happened in the world in the last 2 years. Why do we think the closing lines in sports are getting worse? Well, last year, if we think about hockey, there's games with some fans. There was games with no fans. There was games where half the team was missing. There's games where we have third string goalie starting now. Of course, it's much more difficult to predict that. And that's happening in the NFL this year. How many times have you seen this year, NFL, closing line means nothing anymore? It still means a lot. It's just much more difficult to arrive at the true probability on a game when you have so many more unknowns and, like, unprecedented situations.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, it makes a lot of sense what Rob's saying, like, the bookies has nothing, like, that's probably what triggered you, I'm assuming the most.
This is the stuff that drives me crazy, though.
Or the bookies are getting better. You're like, A, that would mean, because you're right, that it technically what he thinks this is actually, he's wrong, because
his conclusion
should be that if he said here the bookies are getting worse, then you probably wouldn't have been triggered. But also, it didn't have to do with the bookies. It's the market and the bettors are getting worse, because if that line is sitting there and not bet into place and the log loss is actually declined, that actually means that the bettors are worse, because the market's less efficient. It technically would be easier to beat. So that would mean that the bookies got worse. But really what it means is the bettors got worse. And really, on top of that, like Rob said, what it means is there's just been more variance, because there's a lot more things that we don't have sample size for.
Yeah, what really bothers me overall about these is just when people don't understand how the betting space works. And they think that there's, like, whether it's, you know, Vegas knows, those ones are the ones that, like, and it's kind of a similar type of thing here, right? It's kind of like you could summarize that conclusion as Vegas knows. The bookies are getting better. And it's like, that's not how things work.
Wait, would that even mean that the parity has decreased? Like, what would that have to do with anything?
I don't know what the conclusion of this tweet is. That's why I was so rattled when I read it.
There is parity in the NHL, right? The largest favorites that we used to have in the NHL were, like, you know, every game was within, like, roughly minus 300 on either end, minus 300 plus 300. Now, this year, we have seen, I think that's the Florida over Montreal a couple of weeks, or maybe last week, was the biggest favorite. I think at some places, like, yeah, I don't know what we'd give as a consensus, but definitely it was like minus 600 in some places, minus 650. That's the biggest line or biggest spread I've ever witnessed in NHL. Could be wrong. But so, yeah, the parity is decreasing, but that's, like, overall, I don't know if that's correct, because I think the parity is decreasing. It's like a game like that, Montreal is like half the team out and starting like a worse goalie. So yeah, like it, No, no. I don't even know what the parity would have to do.
I'll tell you what's going to happen to the log loss of the closing line when things go back to normal in the world. It's going to look the exact same as the previous years because we have a longer sample of previous years being in a very small range and then a huge drop off over the last couple of seasons. Well, why is that? I mean, I can think of a very, easy hypothesis as to why.
All right.
All right. Next one, Zach. Oh, okay. Live moods. Live moods. Let me preface this. I'm going to preface every single tweet we ever do by saying I don't have anything against this person unless we do. With Spread Investor, I have something against them, so I have no problem with that one. Live moods, no problem with live moods. In fact, she's retweeted some Betstamp stuff before. She's been a supporter of the brand. No issues with that. So I just want to get into this because this one really bothered me, really agitated me. I had some great teased plays today, but thanks to the Colts and Lions, the teasers didn't hit. Steaming angry face. Then we have two teaser lists, one which is a incorrect three leg teasers.
She's listing out the teaser plays for those listening on audio. She's correct. Listing out her plays: Colts -2, Rams -1, Bengals +9.5. And right beside each is the result. So it's either a loss, a push, or a win.
What drove me crazy about this one, I had some great teased plays today. Two teasers. Both of them lost. One of them had a loss and a push in the same teaser. When we get to the point of evaluating individual plays within teasers, I can't get to that point ever. That drives me absolutely insane. But this second teaser, for me, a great teaser has nothing to do whether it won or lost. Let me start by saying that. Obviously, you want to win at sports betting, but you also want to capture certain numbers in the NFL. That second teaser, the losing play is Lions +12.5, where you are going through so many dead numbers on a teaser. 8.
Some would argue all of the dead numbers.
11. That is arguably one of the worst teaser plays imaginable. Now, it looks to me, just based off these spreads, this is some sort of weird, 4 or 5 point teaser. It's not even really a 6 point teaser. That top one seems fine to me because you're at least capturing, if you have a 4 point teaser, which I think FanDuel does, you're at least capturing 3 on 2 of those bets and 7 on 1 of them. That I'm okay with. Mathematically, it's still probably a losing endeavor in the long run, just based off the VIG, but whatever, capturing key numbers. That second one, teasing a total down from 45 to 41, okay, that's actually not too bad because at least you go through 44, but you're teasing a total for one. And then Lions +12.5. But what really bothered me was the individual recap of the tweet teaser plays. I can't get over that. I can't. We can't do this. We cannot do this with teaser plays where you say you lost one of the 3 plays on the teaser and it was a great, great teaser.
Well, one, one, and one.
Yeah, we can't.
Which, I don't know. I mean, I don't know FanDuel's grading on these, but for most of the PPHs, one single push in the teaser pushes the whole parlay. So she might have got a break there.
I don't actually know, but we can't do this. We cannot get to this. We cannot say, this was a great parlay when one of the legs lost and one of the legs pushed. It wasn't.
Or what about if you went 3-2 in a parlay, on a 5-team parlay, and then said, great parlay. If I had only straight betted, I would have made money.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm getting at, right? So I actually do appreciate the recaps. We need more of this kind of stuff where people do recap their plays and actually honestly and transparently do that. I'm fine with that and everything to do with that. But this one bothered me. I'm sorry it had to be Liv Moots. Could have been anyone. Honestly, could have literally been anyone. But yes, that's it. And then I guess the bottom part even triggers me as well, which is early leans from Tuesday, which is Cardinals +5.5, check mark next to it. Bengals +5.5, check mark next to it. Lions +7 with an X next to it. You know what the word lean means to me, Johnny? It means I didn't bet this game. I won $0 off of this game. I don't celebrate winning $0 personally. I don't like that. I don't like recapping leans as winners and losers. Well, here's a question. Do you think, like, I don't know. I don't know Liv enough. But does that happen? If those leans went 0-3, are they in the tweet?
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I mean, I don't think Liv sells picks, so I wouldn't.
No. Listen.
But a lot of people who do sell picks, then, yeah, that's the oldest trick in the book, you know? Lean New Orleans plus 8. Cash, New Orleans plus 8.
Yeah, that bothers me. I mean, it does. I'm all for record keeping and stuff, but when we start getting into individual plays of teasers, tell me, did the teaser hit? Yes. Did you get good numbers in the teaser? Or, like, did the parlay hit? Yes. What were, you know, each leg that you parlayed, did you get good closing line value on that parlay? Same, like, that. The rest of the stuff doesn't matter. Doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. I've said my piece. I'm sorry it had to be Liv Moods. I actually quite like her in general, and I know she's built up a pretty large following as well. So it's nothing personal, but this just happened to be one of the tweets that set me off.
All right. Next up.
Next one.
This surprised me with this one. I haven't seen it yet. Ooh, oh, no, I have okay. seen this one.
This one held a special place in my heart this week. This is going to be a two-part tweet. Jersey Capper, who's been using Betstamp for a long time. Almost like one of the OGs of the app, I would say. One of the original gangsters. Tweets out right before the new year. According to Betstamp's rolling verified stats, we have now officially wiped out the deficit from last NHL season. Happy to put that season behind us with the prayer emoji, you know, hands together.
So you had a last losing season last year on the app, and a lot of people gave him some grief for it, and he's now wiped out that losing season and is now back into the green. So congrats, first off.
Yes, congrats. Next tweet. We get a guy in the messages, in the responses. This guy, AZ back, D-backs, 93-93. What's funny is his whole month of November is not listed. That's why Betstamp is the chosen play tracking tool for every scammer on Twitter. Where are all of his November plays, Frank? He's responding to someone named Frank. Jersey Cap member subs want to know. So this guy, this is why this tweet really bothers me. This guy thinks he's a genius. And he's doxing the Betstamp brand. All the scammers go there to track. His issue is that Jersey Capper did not track plays in November on Betstamp. I don't know the reason for that. I have no clue. I don't know Jersey Capper personally. I know back in the day when I was first betting NHL, we used to, you know, chat on Twitter, whatever. I don't know the reason. The fact that this guy was actually able to use Betstamp to identify that there were no plays tracked in November is exactly why Betstamp is a useful utility for people who are looking into somebody's record, because there is no way that Jersey Capper can delete his November record. It's impossible to do so on our app. Once a play is verified, it exists forever. So this guy thinks he's doxing us and responding and saying this is the platform where every scammer goes, when in reality, he is saying exactly why the platform is useful.
Agree, 100%. Like, he's basically saying, like, well, this guy didn't play he didn't have his November picks on there, so, like, it doesn't count. It's like, well, A, first off, I don't know why he didn't bet in November. That's something you got to take up with him. But now you know that exactly was not there, right? Like, you know what was there and what was not there. You know for a fact that all the picks he placed on Betstamp that he tracked there are legit, are verified. And now he is in the green on Betstamp. Whether he has alternative bets that he had placed or tracked it in other metrics or other platforms or on Twitter is, again, that speaks to the shadiness of someone or whatever it might be. For all we know, he said, I'm taking November off. I'm not betting in November. Or maybe didn't post on Betstamp in November for whatever reason. But his November record was not deleted. His November record was null. He did not post in November. So now you have that ammunition when talking to someone. Hey, why is there a November record there? What was your real November record? Why is that not on there? Why does this not match with the historical record from or that you're advertising? So again, Rob, great find in this one. I think like the reason, yeah, this is almost as if this is like an ad for Betstamp.
Exactly. This guy, that's what,
like, he was able to go not message Jersey Capper, go on the platform and immediately, like anyone who we do have with the app right now, a lot of people criticize a lot of the users who are doing well. This guy's doing well because he does only this. This guy's doing well because he is picking off this line, or he's steam chasing injury news or something like that. Like, wow, isn't it amazing that you can now go through, do the analysis for yourself and exactly see where everyone is winning and who's beating the closing line and why they're beating it and when they're placing. You can see the exact time that they track the bet. So if you know, you can go back and now find it. When was LeBron James announced out? 6:58 p.m.? Great. When was that bet tracked? 6:59? All right. He bet that on the LeBron injury news. So now you know that that user is doing that, and now you can either choose to avoid or potentially, you know, there is an edge there, by the way, so nothing against steam chasing injury news. Most of the time that people, if we do have oftentimes, you'll catch a line that's stale for a minute or two within the app before we can update the lines, and we're working on, you know, making that a lot faster. But like, man, these lines exist. If LeBron is out at 6:58 or 6:57, then probably up until 6:58, 6:59, you're going to be able to catch a price, you know, on the team that's facing the Lakers. So power to it. This is a pro for Betstamp and a lot of people using the platform to look into people. I guess in this scenario, he's not like appreciating that and he thinks it's like a scamming app. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. This is a way for them to actually now go through and see exactly what they're purchasing before they purchase it.
I want every scammer, but by the way, I should say this, Jersey Capper, this is not, has nothing to do with him whatsoever. I don't know why his November wasn't on there. Could have won in November, could have lost. I have no clue. Okay, that has nothing to do with it. And I'm not calling him a scammer, by the way. I just want to make that clear. But I want every scammer on Twitter to be on Betstamp. That would be great. Because at least now somebody can do their due diligence on this person rather than just going through whatever made up records they have on Twitter. So this, I mean, this should be printed out and we should frame it and put it in the office. We should put it in this studio. This is like as good as you can get in terms of promoting.
Yeah. Also, I'll point out for anyone listening, like had he been recapping on like a spreadsheet or like tagged in his bio or on Action Network, then there is a like reasonable amount of certainty that the November record would have just been deleted, right? Like, oh, why didn't he have a November record? Probably lost and deleted it. You would never know. But on Betstamp, it's not the case. You can't do that. So we know for a fact that, like, you know, there's got to be an alternative motive. You have to reach out to him and obviously figure that out. But like the plays that are on Betstamp. They can't be altered. They can't be adjusted. It is what it is. So that record on Betstamp, he's back in the green. As far as I'm concerned, there's other things people may need to look at before buying his package if that is a thing with the November. But all in, he is back in the green. He's having a good season. It's all documented. You can see with the time that the bets were tracked and you can see the closing line value on it. So power to you. Again, I don't know Jersey Capper personally either. And I definitely wouldn't call him a scammer as he's using the platform. And, you know, he is in the green. Like, whether you like it or not, like, you know, a lot of haters potentially like, don't want other people to succeed, but he's back in the green. Congrats. Hopefully it stays like that.
All right, Zach, let's hit the last one here. Okay, this one is interesting. So let me just read this, and then we're gonna have the audio for you, Johnny. This is gonna be the first time you're gonna hear it because it came with a video accompaniment. For those listening to the podcast, you need the audio with it. But this is coming from Sharks and Sports, Sharky Waters Nation, on Twitter, in quotations, "When you refine the craft, you have less plays, an opportunity to think clearly." And let's see what he has to say.
When you start to get to a higher level of refining of the craft, you have less plays because you up your monetary exposure in a play. When I was more juvenile in the craft, I would have 10, 12, 15 plays, but I was only playing $50 per play. So my exposure was still $500. Now I come in there, I'm 500 to 1K a unit, and it's only big bomb bangers. And I don't say that as a cliche point to market. We only hone in on the top spots, but we zone in monetarily as well. And it's just a key point. In sports betting, there are not that many great spots. And just in general, when people are throwing huge boards, it usually speaks to just mindset. In the mind, there's lack of definition in terms of what's really real and what's middle ground. And when you see a big board, it's usually all middle ground shit. And you want top looks, not because it's a marketing angle, but purely because it's honed in that environment. And then you can up your monetary exposure. That's all you really want, right? Like when you're betting sports, you don't want to have 10 units out across 10 games. You want to have one spot that you can trust in terms of numbers and narratives. And that's it.
Big bomb bangers.
Big bomb bangers.
Oh, that's so good. We clipped that. That's so good, Zach. Oh, man. I'm so happy you clipped that. I don't even know where to start with this one other than everything I heard is wrong. Everything. Like, everything. This is the most cliche, like, I'm a sharp sports bettor. This is how
you have to bet. He's pretty well spoken.
He was. It's great. Like, honestly, he's like, you know, I don't do this for marketing or something like that. I'm like, wow. Like, this guy could sell it. Like he really could, you know, he's a guy I definitely hire to sell a product, but, no, the reality is you should be looking to get as much money down on as possible on whatever you have an edge on. That's just the reality of things. If you start to limit yourself to one play, even though it might be your biggest edge, you are leaving a lot of expected value on the table. I think this is one of the biggest pieces of misinformation out there and just perpetually keeps being driven home and driven home and driven home by people that don't actually bet or profit betting, which is you need to limit the amount of plays that you're putting in. And that is not correct. Now, for a casual bettor who has no edge, okay, that rings true.
But it still doesn't ring true with what he's saying. He's saying bet the most amount of money. He's saying bet the same amount of money,
Just increase your variance tenfold.
Yeah.
Instead of dividing it across and being able to sustain a bankroll for a longer period of time, let's just throw it all on one pick that you really like.
Yeah, but to be fair,
it is
big bomb bangers.
that last part where he said at the end is just completely false, right? Like you never, so assuming your edge is the same, you always want to reduce variance versus increase variance, right? So an example that people might be even more likely to understand is like if you had a dice roll and you had a positive expected value edge on the dice roll, let's say you're given like 6-1 or 7-1 on the dice roll,
right?
Then would you rather have one dice roll or would you rather have 1,000 dice rolls? You'd probably rather have 1,000 dice rolls, right? Because you're going to be able to realize that edge. So either way, we're saying at the end is 100% wrong. You definitely do not want to get less plays just for the sake of getting less plays and bet more money on those plays. That's completely inaccurate. And what he says, he's like, when you're starting out, you got to bet less and then you got to increase your monetary exposure. I don't even know. It sounds
it's
nice.
It's very wordy. It's good. This is what I'm talking about. Like this guy would definitely like back in the day, if this guy went door to door like 30 years ago selling encyclopedias, he definitely retired when he was like 34.
Selling encyclopedias?
I only say that because my parents bought like 3 encyclopedia sets off door-to-door salesman.
Yeah, as did mine.
Yeah, everybody's did. That's what I'm saying. Like this guy would definitely be, he would have got started right out of school, did 10 years hard, aggressive selling, and then been retired. 100%.
Dude, but actually though, he is very well spoken. I'll give him that for sure. Like a lot of it sounded good. Info in terms of like, another thing you mentioned is like, there's just not that many like games on the board that are high edges. Like, listen, everyone models, caps, bets in a different way, whatever you want to call your own style. What I will say is like, if he's saying now we like to key in on 3 picks a day, now by setting a number, regardless of whether, like now, what if there's 0 plays that day? Bet his top 3? Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, you can't just bet your top 3 of every day. You need to have a way to actually calculate what percentage ROI or what percentage edge you're looking to bet, right? So if you're like, okay, these 3 should be an edge of above 1.5%, and that's the threshold I use to bet. So anything above 1.5%, I'm going to bet, and I'm going to vary my bet size above that. That is more of the correct way to do so. When you're looking at betting my top three, what if you have only two plays that are good that day? Now you got to bet three. And what if you have 10 plays that are good? You can only bet three. Doesn't make much sense. In terms of the amounts, I'm not here to amount shame anyone. Definitely
no, I don't care
about
that.
On the podcast. But when he's saying like, oh, instead of betting $50 on 10 games, bet $500 on one game. Another thing that you'll find is like when you're line shopping and going around, it's significantly easier to find better numbers when you're actually betting lower amounts. So for a recreational bettor who has a bankroll of $500 or $1,000, like definitely do not bet $500 on one play, because what you're going to find is if you spread it out, you're going to be able to keep that money in different sports books. And then from there, you're going to be able to pick off better numbers at each sports book. So betting less and having more games is almost always going to be better, unless it's like a once in a lifetime type edge on a single game. That obviously in that scenario, I mean, doesn't exist in real life. We talk about like $1 billion flips, stuff like that. Obviously, then you're going to, you know, invest a larger amount. But for almost every other scenario, it would be better to have more plays at less money and cumulative a higher ROI and higher edge than have one play, the same ROI, or even a little bit higher ROI and dunk all your money on that. Do you agree?
Agreed. Regardless of what you heard in that audio, bring it back to this tweet. When you refine the craft, you have less plays. I would say that is 100% the opposite. When you refine the craft, you have more plays. You have more plays. Plain and simple. If you can find more edges, that's refining the craft. When you're limiting yourself to only a few plays here and there, you're just leaving so much money on the table.
Wait, what's an opportunity to think clearly? Why is that in there at the end of the tweet?
I don't know. It seems very like prophetic. I actually don't know. I don't know this guy. So people might be like, well, no, you don't know this guy. How did you come across this? Stuff gets retweeted on my timeline all the time. Someone likes a tweet. I see it. It's, you know, sometimes it's a cesspool. And I actually had to pick from a bunch of, we spent half an hour on this segment. I can't even believe we spent half an hour on this segment, but yeah, I mean, this one was one that really rattled me. And then I watched the video actually didn't rattle me. It actually made me laugh quite a bit because it's just full of misinformation all over the place. But I think that's it for the tweets. I think that was a good debut segment. Big Bob Bangers.
This guy.
You noticing anything there?
I was just trying to see if he sells picks. That was it. He's from Florida. Is this Joey Tunes' brother? Kind of looks like him, no?
I don't know.
Okay, cut that out. I don't want to offend Tunes. He's gonna kick my ass.
You think you're gonna offend Joey Tunes? He will put you in a pretzel though.
For sure.
You're not gonna offend Joey Tunes, trust me. All right. That's it. We're wrapping up here. For those who are watching on YouTube, hit the subscribe button below, please. Trying to grow the following here. Anyone that subscribes, you'll get notifications in real time. Whenever an episode goes live, boom. You get pinged, you get to watch the episode. How good is that? What a life that is.
Okay. we are hoping to have, like I said, Adam, like Rob said, Adam Chernoff on next week. We'll talk some NFL. We'll talk some stuff maybe about the Canadian market, a couple other cool things, and learn more about Adam. He's a friend of ours that has been in the space for, you know, quite some time. And we'll test out the first in-person studio guest via Zoom. Where is Adam right now? Is it West Coast?
No, yeah, he's in like
Calgary,
Alberta. I don't think he's actually in Calgary. I think he's like northern up. He posts like the temperatures where he's at. I don't know even if it's inhabitable, really. Like polar bears die where he is.
No way.
From the cold.
So yeah, we'll have him up on the screen and we'll go from there. Everybody, thanks again for watching and listening, and we appreciate it. See you guys next week.